right, we're going to turn now to my first guest. I've got Jane Forkert in the studio. Good morning.
Good morning, Aaron.
So to start with, we're going to explain why Jane's voice sounds like it sounds, because it sounds a bit different. And you had... What actually happened? I read it, but I've forgotten exactly what the details were, so I'll get you to describe it.
Yeah, sure. So I was born with some quite large cysts in my larynx and had a tracheostomy put in at 3 weeks old. And then had it taken out at 15, put back in at 18. And then when I was 20, a surgeon at Green Lane Hospital decided to remove the cysts and... sort of stuffed it up, really.
Oh.
So, yeah.
That's not so good. And, you're pushing against something on your throat? What's that?
Yeah, so I still have a tracheostomy tube and to breathe through because my airway is so narrow because of his handiwork. And he scarred one of my vocal cords, so that's why I sound a bit different.
A bit different, yeah, okay. Yeah. You must have had to put up with a lifetime of people reacting strangely when they first meet you.
Yeah, well, as we said before, you know, people tend to be focused on how I sound rather than what I'm saying, so...
Till they get used to you.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So, and so you've come on the radio, you're obviously really passionate about what we're going to talk about today,
yeah.
I guess, to do that with your voice and you knowing the reaction that people are going to have.
Definitely.
So what we're here to talk about is animal communication.
Yes, that's what I would love to talk about.
And is it about our relationship with our animals?
It's about our connection.
Our connection, yeah.
You know, most people are just trying to do their best with their animals. They're going day to day. They might chat to them from time to time. You know, they'll talk to them, but... real true heart connection goes much deeper than that. And it's also about listening to our animals. So it's about hearing what they have to say to us and the messages that they are trying to give with not having a voice. And there was a stage in my life in 2002 where I had surgery to try and fix this and ended up not being able to talk for 8 months.
Oh, wow.
So I lost my voice completely, and it gave me a really good insight as to how it is for animals.
Yeah, I mean, was that quite depressing initially? Like,
oh, it was a roller coaster. I had two sons were at primary school and one was at intermediate, and they were full on sports, and it was a very interesting time. Yeah.
Yeah, very interesting. That's a word that covers all sorts of things, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I guess you were carrying like a scribble board around with you or something like that, notepads and...
Yes, yeah, I had a little voice machine that I was supplied with, but it was quite slow. The technology back then wasn't quite as good, so...
Yeah. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So what insight did that give you into sort of animals and their relationship with people?
Well, they have to send their messages in different ways, you know, and... conflict is one of them. So when there's behavioural issues or health issues with our animals, that can be them trying to tell us something. So it's a really good way of conflict. It's a really good way of looking at ourselves initially.
Yeah.
Because, you know, there's that concept that our animals are our mirrors, and I don't really like that. I like to think that because we operate from two ways of being. We're either operating from our egoic structure or we're operating from our hearts. And our animals can show us when we're operating through our egoic lens and that we need to shift our focus into our hearts and operate from the higher. So, and in doing that, our connection with our animals becomes far greater and we're able to see them more clearly and hear them more clearly.
Okay, so what's the thing with, like, they're trying to communicate, but they don't have like the intellect we have, so they're trying to communicate is they
sort of do in a way. I'll tell you a little story about,
like their bodies know and they know something's wrong and they want you to know, but it's
well it's the thing is that all problems and issues are structural. So when there's something going on with our animals, it's structural, and all we need to do is apply another structure to it to strengthen it. And the structure in this case is a deeper connection with our animals and listening to them at a deeper level. And I teach a thing called circle work, which is an intuitive process of drawing a circle, putting your animal's name in it. Imagine yourself stepping into it and getting an intuitive sense of what's going on with your animal.
So is that like a ritual to shift you mentally or emotionally into a different place?
Again, it's a structure that we use.
Yeah, I guess structure or ritual, I'm kind of meaning it in the same way.
Ritual sort of implies a bit of woo-woo. But this is quite grounded, and it's based in work that I've been studying for the last 4 years.
Okay, where does it come from? What's the basis of that?
So the basis of it is it's alchemy, but based in the hermetic principles of alchemy.
Okay, all right. I don't know what that is. So.
So alchemy is thousands and thousands of years old. It predates most religions. And there's a wonderful book called The Kybalion, which is written by the three initiates, which it lays out the premises of alchemy. And I've studied it through my mentor, William Whitecloud, who wrote a book called The Magician's Way. And his business is called Natural Success.
Okay.
And I've studied all this work through him, and then because I also have done animal communication since 2006 and studied through Margaret Coates, who is a UK animal communicator. And I realised when I went to California and did a couple of courses with her, I realised that everybody picked up the healing side really well, but the communication side was a lot more difficult for people to grasp onto. It required a little bit more depth in knowing yourself and connecting with yourself first. And so people weren't really getting it. And then when I come across this work with William Whitecloud in his Natural Success business, I realised that the technique called circle work that he teaches could be transferred into this animal communication.
Okay, so what's the experience of, I mean, is it like a, does the experience of communicating with an animal when it's going well, is it like a conversation with another human being? How is it different? Well, I'm just looking for, kind of for a description.
It is, actually. I get a really good sense of... someone said the other day that animals don't have personalities, but they really do.
They do, yeah. I think most people who've had a few pets should be aware of that, yeah.
Yeah, no.
Maybe they meant it in some technical scientific sense or something, I don't know.
Yeah, no, they really do, and I get a very good sense of what's going on with the animal. I do a generalised circle first, and we have a look at an overview of what's going on, and then we do specific areas, health, food, anything else that the client wants to address, and issues and problems, and a few clients lately have had to put their animals to sleep and they just want confirmation that that's the right thing to do, and that's quite a hard one.
Yeah, it's a hard decision. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Lots of us have been through that. The experience of, like, I'm trying to get like a handle on what happens in the communication. Is it partly that you just know the animal quite well?
No.
No, it's not to do with that.
No, okay. Because I work with people all around the world. Yeah.
I mean, when I'm saying you, I don't mean you directly, but I just the general you, like the person who's communicating would be with an animal. They know
yes,
well.
Because we are we're creative spirits in a human body, aren't we? So we're connected to each other and all things through all time and space. So and stepping into the circle, which is it's a bit of a shamanic thing, actually, drawing a circle. It creates a space where it contains information, so it keeps things out on the outside, and it provides a sort of a tunnel vision into what you're looking at. And yeah, circles have been used in a lot of indigenous rituals, I suppose, like you said. So in doing that, you get a very good sense of what's going on, and the more you practice it. But I've taught people in sessions in the moment, and they have very good experiences and can't believe, you know, you can tell when somebody's mind jumps in the road of their intuition. You know, when it's intuitive, intuition is the first thing that pops into your head.
So I guess what I'm trying to get to with comparing it to human communication is we focus on our words a lot.
Yeah.
But there's a lot else in any communication, there's a lot more going on. Like we're instinctively reading people's faces and body language and things like that. So obviously with the animals, when there's not spoken language and there's not that analytical thing, we're back with those other things.
It depends how it works for you, how your intuition works for you, because everybody's intuition works differently. Some people get pictures, some people get words, some people get both. Some people just get symbols, and then they have to unpack the symbols. I'm quite lucky because I get all of it. One time years ago, I worked with a liver chestnut in Te Puke called Chocolat, and the way that he came through when
it's
I worked...
a horse?
Yes, a horse.
For the uninitiated, yeah.
Yeah, a horse. And the way that he came through was really interesting because he came through like he was talking like a typical Kiwi farmer. Typical Kiwi, but
it's quite a funny idea.
Yeah, he was gorgeous, though, this massive horse. And the people that were caring for him at the time had only just brought him. And they said, yes, his last person was a typical Kiwi farmer, and he was just hacked around the farm. And I said, he's not liking his name. And this is another thing with animals, is they have quite particular about their names. And he said, you know, he's not Chocolat. It's too flash for him. Like, his original name was Fred or something like that. And so some other information came through in that, and they took on board, and this is the other important thing, is when information comes through from our animals, we really need to follow through on it. I've had instances where people haven't, and there's been some quite dire consequences. So they followed through on it. They did everything that the horse, you know, was suggesting, and they rang me up that night after the first session, and they said, you won't believe this. Usually when we feed the horses, he just barges in and eats everything and leaves the two mares with what's left. He said that night he stood back and he let the mares feed first.
Right.
And so his whole behaviour had changed because he was more aligned with who he truly was.
Do you get, you must get some interesting reactions when you do this with people, like some disbelief, right? Like how does that play out?
Yes, well, I did have, I also volunteer for Kaimanawa Heritage Horse.
Yeah.
And a friend of mine, Michelle, lovely, lovely woman, she rescues them. So she has Liberty Lane Horse Rescue, and I was travelling around at one stage a few years back and working with a few of their rescues that they'd fostered out. And I got to this woman's place, and she was a real hardened horsewoman, right? She was...
There's a lot of people like that in the horse scene, isn't there? Yeah,
she was,
for sure.
She was living in her horse truck. She was...
Oh, wow. Oh, that... Okay, right. Yeah. That's serious. Yeah.
On this land that she'd leased, she was... I really liked her as soon as I met her, but she was really quite standoffish with me because she was letting me in because the kaumana was... She was fostering, you know, she was told I was coming. And we worked with the first one and she was fine. And then the second one, called Heather, there's a grey mare, she had been beaten. And she showed me an image of her. She was in a round pen from where she came from, and there were some boards that had been replaced at the bottom of the round pen. And the guy that had her had picked up a board and whacked around the head. And as soon as I spoke, when you verbalise what has gone on with an animal in the past, it has this effect of releasing the emotional memory out of their cellular structure. So Heather was in the process of releasing this as I was speaking, and I could feel the emotion come through me, but I'm quite used to it. And the woman that was the hardened horsewoman, she just burst into tears. And she was quite embarrassed about bursting into tears, but it was just because the emotion was so strong coming.
And she could see the horse. And of course she'll know the horse well. Well, did she know the horse well?
No,
she just
didn't.
Got it. Okay, but she knows horses.
She was just fostering, but so she couldn't believe what she was feeling that was coming from the horse. And she was, quite apologetic for bursting into tears. But so, people can be disbelieving, but once they step into what's going on and the connection with the horse, you know, true heart connection or the animal, then it's just a game changer.
So I've been told by quite a few people that mistreatment of animals in the horse racing industry and the horse industry in general is pretty common. What do you do about that? What's your thoughts? I know you've got thoughts on that, so.
I did work for a guy for about a year. He was quite famous in the polo world, and he had some racehorses as well.
Yeah.
And he also used to buy young racehorses that didn't make it on the track and make them into polo ponies, and he's a wonderful horseman. But it's going to be a ripple effect, and that's why I'm coming on here. And just, it's all about awareness. The more aware that people are that we can connect at a heart level and a deeper level with our animals, it will ripple out into the industry. Eventually. Yeah, there are some owners, trainers that, that do have better practices than others, but the industry in general is just diabolical, and same with rodeo,
Most people are probably familiar with the term horse whisperer because of the movie, and that's become a popular term. And it gets reused in terms of, like, I know there's someone advertised themselves around here as a baby whisperer. To my way of understanding, it's just about understanding the animal or the baby, and not just using force, whether that's verbal or physical force, to get them to do what you want. Does that align with what you're doing?
Yeah, definitely. It's about receiving, We can't be in the masculine of taking action all the time. We have to go into the feminine. We have to step back and allow ourselves to receive and to receive the information. And, I think the force that you're talking about is like making, like using horses as an example. Using physical force. When a horse refuses to do something, it's usually because they're trying to tell you something. Like, they might need a chiropractor to come in and look at their hips, They might have just been shod and their feet are really sore. So the only way they have to communicate is to retaliate most of the time.
Yeah, let you know that something's not normal by being not normal.
But we see it as misbehaviour. I've had horses years and years back, and before my awareness grew, and I did the same thing, you know. If I was bucked off, then that horse got taken up and down a really steep hill a few times to be punished. And now, if I was bucked off, I don't ride very much now because I don't like the concept, but... if I was bucked off, it'd be, wow, you know, I need to get somebody in to look at him because he's sore.
Yeah, yeah. This is a thing about babies, but I remember a lecturer at university, a psychology lecturer. I hardly remember any of my classes, but this one moment where he talked about people think a baby's been bad because it cries. Like, you come into the room and it'll stop crying, and then you leave again and it cries, and it's like it's trying to manipulate you. And he said the baby's neural development is not at a point yet where it can do that. Like, it's completely unable to do it. But that's the thing of us assuming misbehavior. Like, our culture seems to do that, assuming there's misbehavior going on and there's actually other things happening that it's better if we understand.
Exactly. And that understanding comes from understanding ourselves first as well. So the more that we understand where we're coming from, as humans, the more we can understand where our animals are coming from.
Mm.
Yeah.
Was it for you a bit of a process to go from someone just doing the conventional way to a new thing? Like, did you have to break habits and think about it for a while, or did the light go on one day? How was it?
I've always talked to animals in my head. I'm an only child, so I grew up talking to my family cat a lot.
Yeah.
And my mother was a tricky woman, so I had a great bond with the cat, and then later on a dog, and then later on horses. So I've always just done that, and just known and thought that's how everybody operates. But as far as transitioning into more awareness, I think Margaret Coates' book, Healing Horses, had a lot to do with it. Yeah, I was in a bookshop, and I've got three sons, and they were choosing books. This was years ago. And I packed it up, and I just couldn't put it down. And then meeting her in person in California was amazing. She's an incredible woman. She's a very strong English woman, and she really is a voice for animals.
So what was her message, her central message?
Her central message is to connect with animals as the beautiful beings that they are, and to know that there is a way of communicating and connecting that goes way beyond what we know as human beings.
Okay. Folks, we're talking to Jane Fawkett. Your website's happilyheart.com. If you've tuned in halfway through the interview, Jane's had an experience in her life of operations on her throat and polyps and things, and it has turned out like this. That's how your voice sounds. What's your message or your mission? What's your mission? Because if you have a sense of there's a mission for you about this. Yeah.
Oh, definitely. So my mission statement for Happily Heart is to raise the vibration of humanity through heart connection with the animal kingdom.
Okay, that's a biggie.
Well, the animal kingdom's vibration is way beyond where we're at as a human race at the moment. And the more that we step into our own hearts, and by that I mean our true selves, you know, the higher, the more we're going to raise ourselves up to connect with our animal family. And, you know, part of that is being in presence. It's, if anyone out there's read Eckhart Tolle, The Power of Now, you'll know the importance of being in the present moment, because when we're totally in presence, this is where the egoic future and past can't exist, and this is where animals reside all of the time.
Yes, they're not stressing about the future or worrying about the past, are they?
No.
You're talking about this concept of circle work. And it sounded like you were visiting horses, or people with troubled horses, for want of a better phrase, and you were doing the circle work yourself, stepping into the circle, but do you also teach people to do that?
Yes, I do. I have. I can do it during a session. The best way is I run a six-week course, which I run as a group thing, and I also do it one-to-one.
Okay, right.
Yeah, and it's a wonderful course because it steps you through the process. So you come out the other end and you're able to do all of this for yourself.
And from what I'm hearing from you, the communication is sort of in the form of an intuitive sense, I guess.
Yeah, the work is largely based in intuition. And everybody has intuition. Like, you know, we all get those gut feelings that someone's going to ring. You know, so-and-so is going to ring, and then they ring. But to use your intuition at a different level, you have more control over it. It's not just willy-nilly. It doesn't just happen when you least expect it. It happens. You can use it to create your life, you know, and set intentions and create what you would love in your life.
Yeah. Yeah. All right, well, folks, like I said just before, we're talking to Jane Fawcett. Your website's happilyheart.com if people want to know more about that, and or maybe engage your services if they've got a troubled horse or any animal, I guess, any mammal.
Any animal. I've worked with chickens and cows.
Okay, right.
Cats, everything.
Okay, all right. Thanks for coming in.